Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Lead, Sell, Grow, the Human Experience Podcast. Hope you guys are doing well. If you have not checked out Relentless Goal Achievers, the group that's going to take you from wherever you are to your next level, click on a link somewhere below in the description and go check it out, because that group is truly meant for entrepreneurs, sales professionals, leaders who want to take their profession to the next level. All right, my guest today is Julian Lumpkin. He is the CEO of SuccessKit, a company that's making tremendous waves in the B2B space. And I asked him to come on the show because of his awesome story. So Julian started out in sales and then decided to, from a management position, give it all up, move in with his parents to start his own company. He bet on himself. And I'm like, dude, you got to come over, share your story here. So Julian, welcome to the show. Can't wait to hear what you got to say.
Thanks, Eric. Great to be here.
Awesome. All right. So tell me, so you were a sales manager before this long, long ago, you know, decades ago, probably not that long, but you were a sales manager, you were leading a team. What were you guys selling?
Yeah. So I worked for a VC backed technology company called Axial, which was a private network for people buying and selling companies. So we worked with investment bankers and private equity firms. And I started out in sales there. Did that for a couple of years, became a team lead. And then during my final 2 years there was the sales manager.
Awesome. And then you were going on a trajectory, right? They're probably thinking you're going to be one of the leaders in that company. What changed or what shifted for you?
Yeah, that I was on the kind of VP of sales track, and whether it was there or somewhere else, that was my goal for my career. That's where I thought I was going. I didn't intend from the beginning to become an entrepreneur. What happened was, while I was there, there were a couple things that sort of started to shape the way that I think. The first one is I met someone who had their own private database and was just working on their own in a recurring revenue model. And it occurred to me, you know, at that point, thinking about being a solo entrepreneur, you know, if you can close some kind of what we would probably consider small B2B deals, but they're for yourself, if it's recurring revenue, just thinking about how quickly that would add up if I was closing some of these deals for myself. So that was kind of in the back of my mind. It was a vendor that was selling to us, but I was just kept, you know, he was selling us a database. And I kept thinking like, man, this guy is on his own, you know, closing, you know, a $1,000 a month contract. And like, he doesn't need that many of those contracts before he's in a really nice situation for himself. So I think that's when the seed was planted. And then over the next year, something that really occurred to me is our best sales reps on the team were better at using examples of our own customer success. And what a lot of them did is they were friends with the account management team. They learned about the things that were happening in the network where our clients were succeeding and wrote down and remembered those stories. And that enabled them to sell in a more effective way because it wasn't just like, here, let me show you a case study or a testimonial. They knew all of the examples of our own customer success so that when they were speaking to their prospects and they heard a specific thing that they cared about or was important to them, they could talk about that client success. And that was like magic. And it got me thinking for the initial idea of what SuccessKit was. It certainly changed. I can tell you about how we started and then what we became. But I saw that we're spending so much money on hiring the best sales reps, best sales training, but the most important information was just our own examples of customer success. And that led me down to the path of starting SuccessKit.
Man, you know, you just said something. And I remember when I was leading a sales team for DCA Imaging Systems, it's a technology company in Washington, DC area in Maryland. And I noticed that sales reps were keeping their wins to themselves and their challenges to themselves. And it's such, once we got into meetings together and started sharing what was going on, hey, what was the problem you solved? How did you win that deal? Well, who was the competition. What are the results your clients getting afterwards? I noticed, because I had a chance to be on different sales meetings with different reps, that as they shared those stories, it was more impactful. And you're absolutely right. Sales do go up. So if you're listening and you're leading a sales team anywhere, you have to be that conduit. You have to, you got to be that person to kind of extracts that information out, because salespeople will not naturally just sit down and talk about this stuff without a leader doing it. And kudos to your sales team, the ones that were successful to go out and find that information. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I just spoke with one of them a few months ago, and I was telling him about how he inspired me to start my company.
Oh, wow. That's pretty neat. Okay, so, all right, back to your story.
Yeah, so, you know, once I had the idea, it like, you know, just as it often does, became an obsession. Like, I couldn't stop thinking about it. So it was about 2 months from when I initially thought of the idea, doing research, started talking to other sales reps, sales leaders, seeing if they also had the same problem on their sales team, that I decided I was going to just kind of go all in and do this.
What was the actual idea that you had?
Well, yeah. So the initial idea for Success Kit was a little bit different from what we are now. What I initially thought of and what we initially created was a technology product to help companies document a large volume of their customer success stories, maybe dozens, hundreds, if not all of their success stories, and then a tagging system so that it could be tagged to all of its relevant attributes, like what objection it overcame, what was unique about it, all the different things. And then our product, and this is what I can talk to you about the level of success we had creating it, would automatically recommend the most relevant story right in the CRM of that sales rep. So if you're a sales rep, you're talking to an account, you'd be able to see, you know, all of the most relevant success stories to that account based on the data you had. And you could come into the system and filter if you kind of learned something unique that wasn't in the CRM to find the most relevant success story for that situation.
That's huge.
Yeah. And we did build the product. So this was the end of 2016. I resigned from my position. I invested $100,000 of my own money to create this initial product. And I hired some developers. I was on my own. I'm a non-technical, of course. I think I told you before, I left my nice apartment in Manhattan and my nice management job and moved back in with my parents on Long Island, and had some developers build this thing and started making cold calls to sell it.
Man, I love it. Okay, so how did that go?
It went, I would say, okay. the kind of story of our first couple of years was, you know, when I should say, you know, I when I started the company, what I thought I would do is either succeed and raise venture capital or fail very quickly and go back to my VP of sales job or career path. And neither of those things happened. So we built a very simple product, but it worked, and it added value for some of our clients. And I got a few kind of initial clients from people I knew. My former boss became my first client, a couple people in the industry, but I had to obviously build beyond that. So it took, you know, probably about a year, and we got our first 10 to 12 clients, which was not enough to really succeed and have a kind of profitable business or a business that venture capitalists would be interested in investing in. But it was enough success to keep me going because our clients were succeeding. I was making sales. We were surviving, but certainly not thriving. And
what was the monthly recurring revenue you would charge on average?
It was probably about $500 a month.
Per salesperson or per company?
Per company.
Per company. Okay. Yeah. So now you're making about $5,000-$6,000 a month coming in. Okay. Breathing room. You're not in Manhattan. So, okay. A little bit more breathing room until tax season in Long Island.
Exactly. It was just enough. I mean, you know, to cover some expenses. I wasn't taking a salary at the time. And but it was enough to kind of keep going. We also raised a little bit of money, thinking we're going to be a technology company at that point. So over the course of the first year and a half, we raised about $100,000.
Who's we? You're saying we.
Yeah, so I was the only full-time employee. I think I'm in the habit of saying we because now we're kind of a four or five-person, five-person company now, full-time employees. But back then, I was the only full-time employee. And I did have a couple of my close friends who served as advisors and were very involved. But at the time, it was me.
Good for you, Julian. That's pretty awesome. So let me back up just a little bit. The mental process from idea to actually quitting your job and moving in with your parents, it didn't just happen overnight. Like there had to be a pain, or there had to be something that was gnawing at you that like, you got to do it. You got to do it. You got to do it. Because that's, I think 99% plus of people would not do that, would not make that move. Leave their secure, awesome, or perceived secure, awesome leadership position, quit it for the unknown. Did you already develop the product before you quit, or you quit and then started developing the software?
I resigned right. And when I resigned, I think I agreed to stay till the end of the year, which was like 2 or 3 months. So we started developing while I was knowing I was on my way out, but the product was not yet built. What kept me, well, there's a couple things that made that, I mean, I'm not going to say it was easy, but easier than one might think. Number one was that when I was telling other sales leaders and people in sales and people in the industry about the idea, they were getting excited about it. And, you know, it should have been a little bit more of a indicator for me that not that many of them were actually saying, I will pay for this now. But there was, but I felt the momentum of the idea. Feeling that momentum from other people, seeing, you know, the vision that I had, that it was translating to other people, was enough to keep me going. And also, you know, and I turned out to be 100% wrong about this. My thinking was, this isn't all that risky because, you know, I'm risking the money. I can make, you know, I can go back and do that again. But if it failed, it's not like I wouldn't be able to restart that path. I could get another sales manager, maybe even move to VP right from that. So my thinking was, I'm going to try this. If it doesn't work, I'm not going to be on the street. I'll go right back to my path. And I thought I was kind of on this path to succeed quickly, raise a seed round and really build something, hire a team, or fail and go back to my management path that I was on.
How much time from idea till resignation from your job?
About 2 months of talking to people. And I remember the moment I made the decision, I was kind of just like, I was talking to people. And like I said, I was getting excited about it. I do have a tendency to make quick decisions. And I was talking to this founder of a tech company, and kind of going back and forth on whether I should kind of start it on the side and try to build it, which really didn't appeal to me. My management job was intense, and I wasn't too into the idea of kind of doing two things at once. But I remember he told me, he said, this is going to be so difficult that if you're not sure that you want to do this, like if you're really having that much trouble, just don't do it. And somehow that just made me realize that I could go back and forth for months and think about it, but I had to do it and I was going to do it. So I made the decision that day and resigned the next morning to the shock of the management team there.
There's so much I love about this. I can't even express it in words, but I'm going to back up. I know we want to move forward, but I love what I understand about that decision is that you had to become a certain type of person to be able to make that kind of a decision. It's not a decision most people make. So what I want to find out is like, what personal development programs were you involved with? What books did you read? Like, what podcasts were you listening to? What shaped your form of thinking up until that point? Besides Lead, Sell, Grow, obviously, that didn't exist in 2016.
Yeah. You know, I became very interested in that type of content after the fact.
Really?
Because I was, yeah, because, you know, when I was a sales manager, I feel like I had so much support and I was learning from my colleagues that, not that we couldn't read and learn on the side, but I didn't feel this kind of like urge to, you know, outside of working 8 to 10 hours a day and talking to smart people all day, I didn't feel like a need to get all that content. Once I started working on my own, things like that became really important for me. So I'm trying to think if there was anything specific, but no huge influences that I can think of there. I think I just wanted to do it.
That's so cool. Tell me about how you grew up.
Yeah, so I think I grew up in Long Island in a, you know, kind of nice middle, upper middle class situation. My dad was in sales, but he wasn't passionate about it. It was more a way for him to kind of pay the bills. But I was exposed to that. And growing up, I loved sports. I wanted to be an athlete, but I failed miserably at it. And I think learned a lot of really good lessons that helped me when I started in sales, because I had that kind of competitive athletic mindset, but it just didn't translate physically to on the court or on the field. But I love, you know, watching my favorite athletes growing up and that kind of competitive drive I really had. And it was kind of interesting because, like I said, it just did not translate physically on the field. I was just really not that good. But when I then, you know, when I finished college and started my first professional sales job, it was like I learned that athletic mindset where I had no skill, but then in the sales world, I did have the skills and I was kind of a little bit more of a natural, and but also had that kind of hardworking, gritty mentality from being a failed athlete that that worked really well. My sales career went pretty well, to be candid.
That's awesome, man. Anything looking back at it now you would have done different about that process, that whole decision, you know, quick decision to just jump the ship, move back in with your parents?
That's a tough question. I think that if I think strategically, like very much like what could I have done differently, you know, in one sense, yes, I see that there could have been more careful decisions to be made of starting more, you know, instead of investing all the money and building the product, of starting more with a service, which is what we ultimately became, and learning more before diving right into the product. So that is one I would do different, but I don't sit around regretting it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Good for you. All right. One last question I got to ask, cause you were how old when this happened?
When I quit, I was 29.
29. And you said you invested $100,000 of your own money into this product.
Yeah.
How did a 29-year-old save up $100,000 to invest?
I was a really good sales rep. I was a top sales rep for, you know, from, you know, I started working the day I graduated college, and had no gaps. And, it was tough times when I graduated 2009. Mm-hmm. But I was, you know, the best sales rep on all those teams early on. So they kept moving me up to better sales jobs, before I found my way to Axial, which is like the tech B2B world where, you know, the venture capital money was flowing. There's a lot of money to be made. And I was good at closing deals. So, doing that for the eight or nine years since graduation, I had a pretty nice savings set aside.
Good for you. What separated you from other salespeople? Like, what made you number one?
Well, I will say I wasn't the number one sales rep in my most recent position. I was one of the top sales reps, because that was a really impressive sales team at that most recent company. But I'd say earlier on, those more entry level jobs that I started at, I mean, the first thing is I just wanted it more. Like, it was what I wanted to be doing. I had, you know, I graduated from college with not very good grades. a lot of debt, like a lot of people, you know, my parents, you know, no kind of family money supporting me. And I was living in New York and I wanted to survive. And I also just cared a lot. Like I knew I wanted to be in, I didn't know if I wanted to stay in sales forever, but I wanted to be in business. I wanted to do a lot of things. So I just cared way more than the people around me at the first few jobs. Like the first professional job I was at, it was, you know, people were just, you know, it was not a great job looking back. Like the company did not treat us well. And most people complained a lot and kind of went through the motions. Some people tried hard, but I treated it like, you know, I was playing game seven and in the playoffs, and, you know, success was my only option. And so the first couple of years, I don't know what sort of skills it was, maybe just some natural ability to speak well enough and just wanting it a lot more was what carried me early on.
Man, I love that. All right, cool. So now you're in with your parents. You've got the product built. You've got your first six clients with this platform. What shifted from, was the next step shifting it from that technology platform to what you guys are doing now, or was there something else?
Well, we got to 10 clients after the first year, 10 to 12. And then the second year, I was really, you know, the product was functional, but incredibly simple. And I didn't have, you know, more hundreds of thousands of dollars to throw at building the product. So my focus really shifted to trying to raise money. And, you know, thinking I would raise a seed round and bring in, you know, a full-time engineer or perhaps a partner to build out the product.
Did you believe that people weren't buying more often because they thought it was too simple?
Yes. Okay. The technology was never enough. Like the people that I sold really had to be sold on like the excitement of it and really wanting to work with us and being an early adopter and really believing in what we're doing. It was not an impressive product from a enterprise B2B perspective. You know, and I knew that, and you know, we tried to supplement it with me helping them out and helping them document their success stories and doing everything possible. But I knew, you know, there was a lot further the product needed to go to be a true enterprise B2B SaaS solution. And I, you know, one of the challenges I had was that there were so many different things we wanted to build, and different ways you could go, but there was not like a consistency from the clients of what they wanted. And that made it very difficult. And also just me not being a natural product or let alone, engineer to make those decisions and then execute on them. So the product really stalled. It's like, we got the initial MVP out, which worked, it functioned as it should, and it provided value. But the next stage I wasn't able to do on my own. And I really got to the point where I felt like in order for the product to really develop, I needed to either find a partner to come in or raise enough money to hire someone full time. And I wasn't able to do either of those things.
So what'd you do?
So about a year and a half, 2 years, it was kind of getting to the point where, you know, something had to give. I had to either, you know, I wanted to start taking a real salary. I wanted to move out of my parents' place. So we started, you know, while this was happening, like there wasn't enough traction with the product, but our customers were enjoying the kind of service we provide and asking us like, hey, the success story you helped us document, could you turn this into a PDF? Could you create, you know, some content from it? So initially started doing that, like just to kind of, you know, increase revenue a little bit to give myself more time to, you know, ideally raise money and build this product out. But at a certain point, probably 2 years in, I think it was about 2 years when the shift really happened, you know, I kind of had to take a hard look at it. And one of my good friends and advisor, named Cliff, kind of was the one who kind of put it right in front of me that the technology wasn't working well enough and it was holding us back from doing better things on the service side. So it was really when I finally made that shift and gave up on the idea of building a technology and focused on providing a service, which was creating content, not just kind of creating, you know, external content that they could use and share rather than an internal database. And then started not just saying, I'm going to do that and kind of do what our clients say, but I'm going to really focus on making that great. That's when things started to build up and we started to, you know, develop enough revenue that I could take a livable salary, move out and create a nice little business.
All right. So talk to me about what it looks like now.
So now, 7 years in, we are five full-time employees based here in the US. I have a great team. Yeah, I have someone who does the interviews and the writing full-time, someone who does the design and editing full-time, and someone who does all of our video content, as well as another contractor helps with various things. So we've done case studies for almost 200 unique B2B companies. We are small but profitable. I run the company full-time. Because I have a team kind of doing it, I get to focus on things that I like doing, like sales and interviews like this. We continue to slowly than I'd like, grow. And perhaps most importantly, I think the team likes working here. I like doing it. And our clients love us and rave about us. And most of the business we get is from referrals. So we are a good, small, healthy business now, I would say.
Do you use the product yourself? Like, are you going to your clients and getting, I guess, case studies, not testimonials, case studies. That's right.
Case studies. We do video testimonials as well. But yes, we absolutely get our own case studies and video testimonials and share them all the time.
Love it. So, okay. So walk me through, like, how does an engagement work with you? Because initially you thought about, okay, you get one client, monthly recurring revenue, right? A SaaS solution is so profitable. Mm-hmm. You sell it once and it just ching, right? Every single month. By the way, if you're listening, that ching, that's the sound of coins hitting your bank account. So don't make fun of me, all right? If you didn't get what that was. So that's on autopilot. Here, you guys have to actually go out and get new clients, new testimonials. So like after you make the sale, the work begins here. So the models are slightly different, right?
The model is different. It's what does work. What is good is that once a client needs case studies, they very rarely only want one case study. So it's not truly reoccurring in like the SaaS way where they pay a month. I do actually have some clients on a monthly basis, a monthly fee, because they want to do exactly one case study each month. But it's also not like we have to go out and just find entirely new business because, you know, so if I get a new client, let's say we do a single case study for them, you know, the majority of the time, once that case study is complete, they love it. They're like, all right, let's do three more. Let's do five more. Let's do six more. Let's do one a quarter. So it's not the true reoccurring revenue of a SaaS model, but it's not just strictly like random projects needing to get new ones. The vast majority of my business, I think like somewhere between 80 and 90% comes from repeat customers. So I have this, you know, list of built up customers we've done accounts, case studies for. Some of them keep, you know, some of my biggest clients keep doing one every quarter or one every month. Some of them will do three case studies this year. Maybe they need to pause. A year or two later, I'll hear from them, hey, we need more. So it's somewhere, it's certainly not that true SaaS recurring revenue, but it's also not like a marketing agency that needs to just develop new projects and new clients every month.
Okay, so help me understand the logistics of it. You bring on board a new client or somebody wins a big deal, they want some RFP or something they're super proud of, and somebody in the leadership team is like, we got to document this, we need a case study so we can share with others. By the way, if you guys know anything about Dr. Robert Cialdini, the godfather on influence, one of his influence principles is social proof. So if you're not showing to your potential clients that other people are using the thing you want to sell them and are happy with it, you're missing a big boat. But so somebody wins a deal or something, they want to document it, they reach out to your team or you find them, and then what happens?
Yeah, so we'll usually try to do the case study at least 3-6 months after they've won that deal and the client has had enough time to experience some success and say good things. So I'd say the client identifies that they have a happy client that would be willing to participate in a case study or video.
Okay.
And at that point, it's incredibly simple. We get our client to define their objectives for the case study by filling out a simple form. So like they might know some things and want to kind of steer the direction of it. Then they just introduce us to the client by email. We interview the client on Zoom like this. We record and document everything so that we can create videos and other types of content later, but we draft a written case study typically first. We edit it, we let our client review it, let the case study subject review it, and then design a beautiful asset, get approvals, and it's done. So, you know, case studies are interesting because they're not rocket science, but they involve a lot of moving parts. And I think that's why companies struggle to do them themselves. They take a lot of initiative, project management. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that's actually much easier for us to come in as an outsider and just manage the project and get it done. So we make it super easy for the client and for our client's client.
And what's an average cost to be able to do a case study with you guys?
Yeah, a written case study is typically $2,000, give or take. We have options like where you add on video and can be $3,000 or $4,000 with video, and some bulk pricing if you're doing one a month. But that's the typical cost range.
That's awesome. And then what do they do with those? Like, what have you seen successful people or the ones that keep coming back to you? What are you hearing that they're doing effectively with these case studies?
Yeah. So there's a few main, there's usually, and it can be a combination of both. There's a lot of, you know, companies can use their case studies in any part of their sales and marketing process, but there's two main things that people usually like that gives people the initiative to really get this done. Number one is to have case studies on their website. You know, when you go to a B2B website, you know, the biggest, best companies always have an Our Client section. It has videos, it has written case studies, it has quotes, it has everything. So being able to build that site or build that put that content on their website is usually number one. Number two is like I kind of came at this from is using it in their sales process. So if a company, like I tell people, going from zero case studies to a few case studies is a game changer for a sales team. Because I can talk all day about how you can proactively use case studies, and that's really good and important, and that's what my best clients are doing. But the fact is, if you're in a B2B sale, your prospects are sometimes going to say, can I see a case study? Can I see a video testimonial? And the difference between having to say no and talk around it versus saying sure and sending it to them is huge. So the website, having some case studies to use in the sales process, and then for some of my bigger clients, building a kind of repository of these success stories so that their sales reps can not just share a random case study, but learn what that prospect cares about, who they are, what's unique about them, and share a truly relevant example based on the situation. Those are the main things. People post them on social media as well, especially the videos, put them into paid campaigns, send them out in newsletters. Literally anything a company is doing to sell and market themselves, whether you're actually putting the full PDF case study or taking elements from it, adding details of customer proof can be used literally anywhere you sell or market.
That's such a good point. I absolutely love the fact that one, you're an outsider, but you understand how to apply these things. You can actually come in and teach their sales team if you really wanted to on how to use this to really initiate change and win the deals. That's pretty cool. Maybe that's the next arm of your business, you know?
It's funny you bring that up because it's something I've known I should do for a while. And I've done some kind of private consulting as a courtesy for some of my bigger clients, but we're actually going to do a webinar. We're going to make it free, but to just showing everything I know about how to take a case study and use it to build a prospect list, as a reason to reach out to those prospects, as well as how to use it in the sales process on demos. All this stuff is what I've spent, you know, pretty much my whole career on now.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And you become a lot stickier by adding value to your clients. I mean, this is just free adding value. And then because of that, because I'm sure you're going to share the type of case study others in that industry have used, they're probably going to want to get more case studies.
Exactly. Kind
of brilliant. Who's the ideal client for you?
So we can work with a lot of different types of companies. So there is a huge, like where it is, can be all over the place. But I'd say to simplify it, we only work with B2B companies. It's a technology or professional services company, like IT services is big, any, you know, enterprise tech. And it's usually kind of like a small and medium sized business. So the really big companies have full-time employees that focus on case studies themselves. And, you know, we work with a couple of them, but they can usually do it themselves. The type of company we work for is usually has a pretty lean marketing team and they're growing quickly. So they kind of know that they're not ready to hire a full-time person to focus on case studies, like, you know, some of the biggest companies in the world do, but they know they need to get them done. So it's kind of that, you know, small to medium, fast growing, 50 to 100 employee type of company that we're most commonly working with.
Got it. Okay. Awesome. Julian, you've taught me so much today, man. Really loved learning about your company. This has been great. What have I not asked you that you were hoping that I do?
Well, as a, I don't know if this is something you should have asked, but something that I kind of meant to bring up throughout the conversation that is relevant to the story where we talked about it, is that moving in back in with my parents was not that bad. It was something I was dreading at first, but, you know, moving back in with them as an adult, having an adult relationship with them, looking back on it, it was great to spend a couple of years with them when I didn't expect to. And people always kind of talk about that story and it sounds so dramatic and difficult. And it felt that way at the time, but in hindsight, it was a great decision.
Yeah, I think that's awesome because it was your decision, right? That's, you went and you did that. And this was, it's like Les Brown says, right? Like for an arrow to fly far, you got to pull the bow back, right? So when you pull it back, it'll go further. So maybe this was a pullback, maybe this wasn't, but you definitely shot forward. I think the negative connotation of moving back in with your parents is when it's not your choice.
Yeah.
When you just messed up and you had to end up there. So I totally get it, man. Hey, yeah. Listen, thank you. How can people get a hold of you? What's the website?
Yeah. So our website is SuccessKit. So the word success, KIT.io. Pretty easy to find. I'm also on LinkedIn, Julian Lumpkin. I think I'm the only one with that name. So pretty easy to find there. And, you know, anyone in your audience can reach out if they obviously need help with their case studies, but just have questions about how to create case studies, how to use them. I'm always happy to be a resource.
That's awesome. So I think a lot of people who listen to this show, they might be in the coaching, training space. They're entrepreneurs themselves. Do you have an affiliate program? Have thought of an affiliate program?
Yeah, it's nothing too formal, but we pay cash referral fees for introducing us to people. Some of the kind of affiliates use it as a value add, or we can like build in a discount and you can pass it on to the client. So there's a number of ways we can work with people if they want to help their clients or people they know get case studies. And we also just pay, you know, cash referral fee for anyone who introduces us to someone that becomes a client.
That's awesome. Julian, thanks for being here, my friend. Wish you tremendous amount of success with SuccessKit. You guys are rocking it. And I can't wait to see where you are in 12 months, man.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Eric.
Thanks for being here.